Can't think about it. Gotta do it. Who's the champ? I'm the champ.
Marvelous. Marvelous.
He fought it one way and was of one mind.
This is my judge right here, my bidders. If you want to bet on this, this is Kay, and this is all.
Boxing beautifully. Another right hand!
For all that magnificence, none of those knights were the best Marvin Hagler. For fighter, fighting is the easy part. Not fighting is hard. But walking away, with faculties and fortune intact, seems the most difficult proposition of all. The greatest couldn't do it, nor could Hagler's contemporaries. That same ego that made you a champion keeps calling you back. There will always be debts to pay and scores to settle. But of the four kings, this one did something the others could not. Walk away. It's boxing's most unlikely story, and it's happiest. And it's Marvin Hagler's forever.
I just want to be remembered as one of the best. Not necessarily the greatest, but one of the best. Give the kids something to imitate me.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Randall D. Stroud with Nalini Global, and today we have a very special guest, James Hagler, the son of the legendary boxer, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. You know, unfortunately, Marvin Hagler did pass away about a month ago. And it really shook the boxing world because he was in such, you know, good health. And that's part of the reason why we're going to interview his son, James Hagler, who, believe it or not, is a boxing promoter these days. So we're going to wait for him to connect with us here in just a moment. But this should be a very interesting conversation that we're going to have here. See, I'm going to invite him in now. Let's see here. Just bear with me just for a moment. He should be connecting with us shortly. There he is. He's in. Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on?
So I just gave you a great introduction there. You are okay. James Hagler, the son of the legendary boxer, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And you, in your own right, are a businessman and a guy who has a lot of ventures and things going on for yourself that we'll get into. But first and foremost, I'm going to go ahead and say what's on everyone's mind and just say my condolences, man. You know, this death was a loss not only to you and your family, but to the boxing world, and he was inspiration for so many of us. Me, myself, I've been in boxing and martial arts since I was a little kid, and I used to just watch all of his training montages and, you know, seeing that hat that said war on it, I was like, yeah, every morning that we wake up, man, we're going to war, and we're trying to, you know, conquer our dreams. And Marvin Hagler, man, something was you know, so special about him. And I just want to give my condolences, man. And I'm so sorry that you're going through this.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, one thing about that war hat, that was actually my idea. I remember that day.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I remember that day he comes into my room because at the time in Hanover, Massachusetts, where we were living, in my room I had the pictures of all the fighters, Tommy Hearns, all of them on my wall. And one night he comes downstairs. And he comes in my room and he looks at my wall and he says, wow, you know, he says, this is going to be a tough one right here. I said, yeah, Dad, it's going to be war. And he said, okay. And he was like, well, can I take that picture? I said, why you want my picture? He said, because I want to put Tommy Hearns up all over my training camp because I'm going to punish him. You know what I'm saying? And then you're right. This is going to be war. And the next thing you know, he's got the hat war and he's got the shirt war. I was like, wow, it was something else, man. I was like, okay, you know.
Man, so a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, your dad spent a lot of time in Brockton, Massachusetts, and that's also the hometown of Rocky Marciano. And anybody who knows boxing knows that Rocky Marciano, he won all of his fights by knockout, and your dad won like over 90% of his fights by knockout. So what is it about these Massachusetts fighters that make them so tough and such, you know, hard hitters?
Well, you gotta go back to history. So, you know, boxing started out there in Lowell, Massachusetts. And at one point in time, all the tough fighters came from the East Coast. You know what I'm saying? So that's how that started. And then it branched out a little bit towards the South and the West Coast. But that's how it all started. And we lived in Brockton. We're from Brockton. I'm from Brockton. I've been living there all my life. I was born there. And my dad came to Brockton. He was born in Newark, New Jersey. And he was getting in, you know, as a kid, he was getting in trouble. So my grandma had to move him out of New Jersey to bring him to Brockton. And that's how it all started from right there.
Well, you know, one of my favorite boxing matches is Arturo Gatti versus Mickey Ward. And Mickey Ward is from Lowell, Massachusetts, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, just something about that area, man, just breeds just tough, tough guys.
Well, but, there's a lot of Irish people out there, too, now.
That's true. You know, Irish people, man, like, they got their hands, too.
Oh, no doubt.
But, you know, give us a little bit of insight, you know, because, you know, the marvelous one was your father. Did he ever share any stories with you about his motivations for getting into boxing in the first place?
Yeah, I got one story that I would like to share with everybody. When he came to Brockton, there was this guy named Darnell Wigfall. And I guess him and my dad had got into it. Darnell was a little bit jealous of him, from what I hear, and kind of bullied my dad, put my dad in the hospital. And my dad found out that he was boxing. And my dad was always a boxing fan anyways, coming from New Jersey. His favorite fighter was Floyd Patterson. So he heard that Darnell was boxing at the opposite gym. And so he was like, well, you know what? I'm gonna get in shape and I'm gonna learn how to box and I'm gonna beat that guy's butt. So what happened was he did that. He went up to the Petronellis. He started learning how to box and he won a lot of amateur tournaments and he was good at it. And when it's time for him to turn pro, he got his opportunity to fight Darnell Wigfall, knocked him out not once but twice. And then after that, it was history. So I remember after the Hearns fight, we're in the hotel. And I asked him, you know, because after the fights all the time, we watched the fight afterwards. So I said to him, I said, Dad, I said, Tommy Hearns reminded you of Darnell Wigfall, didn't he? He was like, you know what? Every fight reminded me of him. He said, all my fights remind me of Darnell Wigfall. It's funny. But, you know, we're all from the same neighborhood. So people from Brockton and from, you know, from where we at Eastside Projects, they know this story very well. And you can look it up and find it in the library. You'll see it in the newspapers that they have because it made the papers back in the 70s.
Yeah, and, you know, that sort of helps me understand your father's determination, because in his fights, he would get hit with punches and his head would literally just not even move. I mean, you could just see the fire in his eyes in every fight. And that sort of helps me understand his mindset a little bit more, because I feel that a lot of fighters, once they start being successful and they start, you know, rising in that ladder, they start losing that fire. But your father never forgot that first rival that he had, and he carried that with him all throughout his career. That's pretty amazing, and not a lot of people can keep that sort of reminder of their past for their motivation. That's really interesting.
Well, you know, no doubt. It's not only that, but I asked him myself. I said, Dad, how did you do it all this? How did you do it? He said he was determined, and that's what he wanted. And then, you know, he asked me a question. He was like, well, what's the key to staying on top? And I couldn't really answer that question to the fullest. I mean, I answered it, but it was the wrong answer, obviously. And he told me, he said, always stay hungry and never be satisfied. And that was his thing. It wasn't just to win the title. He wanted to make a statement that he was the best at what he was doing. And he was the uncrowned champion. They didn't give him his due. He fought for everything that he deserves right now. You know what I'm saying? So, his hat's off to Marvelous. You know what I'm saying? And that's the key. You know, always be hungry and never be satisfied. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was just going to say that even for people who aren't into boxing, that mindset of, hey, always stay hungry is really relevant, because a lot of times we get a little bit of money saved up or life starts going, you know, good for us, and then we get lazy because, oh, you know, I can relax now. But that's really the time that you should work even harder to stay on top. So I just found that very good advice that you just gave there, or that your father gave, rather.
Well, no doubt. Well, you know, like they say, you think it's hard getting there. It's harder even staying there. You know what I'm saying? And you can use that in your everyday life. You know what I'm saying? When you get something, you work hard toward it, and you work at it, and you work at it, and you want it. Okay, when you get it, you got to say to yourself, what's next? You know, you got to have another goal. Because, you know, my dad had a lot of goals. It wasn't just to win a title. It was, like I said, it was to make a statement in boxing. And his ultimate dream that nobody knows is, and I'm going to share it with you, he wanted to retire undisputed. That was his biggest dream. It wasn't about beating Carlos Monzon's record and all that. He wanted to retire undisputed middleweight champion of the world, and he was trying to do that. He wanted to be one of those fighters that retired with the belt and never came back. That was something that he really wanted to do. And he was heartbroken when he couldn't. I think that broke his heart more than, you know, the fact that he didn't get that decision over Ray Leonard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and we'll get into that in here in just 1 second here. But following your father's career, I mean, he was avoided for most of his career. I mean, he was coming up, knocking guys out, and people were just avoiding him left and right. And I remember in an interview, he said that he had a couple of things going against him. He was like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in this interview, I think he said, I got three things going against me. I'm black, I'm Southpaw, and, you know, I'm knocking people out or something like that. And I thought that was very interesting because I myself am also a Southpaw. I'm a lefty. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to fight Southpaws. And me being a Southpaw, a left-handed guy, that made me watch your father even more, because I'm like, hey, he's the best Southpaw, you know, in, you know, modern boxing history. So why not, you know, follow him? So why do you think, or did your father ever tell you specifically why he really thought that the boxing world was against him for so long and they didn't start to recognize him until towards the end of his career? Like, what took the boxing world so long to finally recognize him?
Well, you got to think back then is the mob days, you know what I'm saying? So he was just too good, and nobody wanted to give up the title. You know, he was good. They knew he was going to win. They knew that. So they tried to run from him. And I remember he was just getting so tired of it. And he had to go to, Kennedy. He had to go to Ted Kennedy to get his shot. And Ted Kennedy threatened all them, Gil Clancy and those guys. He threatened those guys. He said, listen, you don't give this guy a chance, a shot at the title, we're going to open up a full investigation on all you guys. And that's how he got the shots. Cause I've been in that.
Who is Ted Kennedy?
He's I think he was a governor of Massachusetts at one point in time.
Okay. A senator
or a governor. He was high up there in politics.
Wow. So your father was actually trying to get a formal investigation going into boxing as to why he was basically being railroaded out of a profitable career.
Right, and I think that's terrible for boxing. You can't do a guy like that. You know what I'm saying? And it's just despicable. You know what I'm saying? But that's the road he had to go down because they knew that he was going to beat their guys, and they just wanted to hold on to the title long enough. But like my dad said, I remember Vernon Forrest was having the same problems getting a title shot, and I was good friends with Vernon Forrest. May you rest in peace. And I would talk to him in the gym because I was boxing at the time at the Holyfield gym. And he would tell me, he said, yeah, man, you got to tell your dad, man. Tell your dad. I said, hello, man. And tell him I'm trying. And so I told my father, we talked about it. And he told him, he said, hey, tell Vernon, just keep winning. Because as long as you keep winning, they got to give you a shot. And I told Vernon that he had a big old smile on his face. And that just motivated him even more. And I remember he was going for the title. And he came at me. He's like, I got the shot. Tell your father to be watching. I said, we will be watching. And we watched it, and we was very happy for him. And he was so excited that he got the chance and opportunity, and he won the title. So that was a good one, you know.
Well, just a moment ago, you mentioned the Sugar Ray Leonard fight. So I want to go and get into that. So about 2 days ago, whenever me and you were talking on the phone, great conversation, by the way. But I went back after we got done talking, and I watched the fight between your dad and Sugar Ray Leonard. I watched it twice, actually. I watched it once with the commentary, then the second time I watched it with no audio, because sometimes those commentators can be a little bit biased. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was watching the fight, and it was a pretty tough fight to score. I was looking at it, and it did look like Sugar Ray was maybe landing more shots, but your father, the shots that he was landing, was causing more damage. So if I'm a judge, do I judge the fight based on the amount of times that a guy's fist, touches someone's face, or do I judge the fight based on effective and damaging punches? So, I could understand people going for Sugar Ray Leonard, and I can understand an argument going for your father, and I can understand an argument for a draw. So I guess I have two questions for you. First off, who do you think won the fight personally? And secondly, why did a rematch never happen?
Well, I thought my dad won the fight, hands down. If anything, it should have been a draw. What that means, he would keep his title and he could have retired. I think that would have been a fair judgment than say Sugar Ray Leonard won. You know what I mean? And that way he would have been able to keep the title and they would have tried to have a second fight, but that wouldn't have happened. The reason he didn't come back, he didn't want a second fight. His thing was this. It was funny because we always talked about it. He said, they want me to fight. So he said, I want this amount of money. So they went back to the drawing board and they say, okay. And then he said, nah, I want this amount of money. And he went back to the drawing board and did it again. And he said, nah, I want this amount of money. And then he came back and did it again. And then he said, if you put all three titles on the line, I'll come back. And they were, Bob, we can't do that. He said, well, hasta la vista.
Wow, man, that is so rare because, obviously your father did, care about making money. We all do. But he equally cared about his legacy. And a lot of boxers nowadays are so careful about protecting their record and protecting their belt and fighting lesser competition. And your dad obviously wanted to get paid, but he also wanted to be the unified champion. And in boxing now, we have so many boxers, WBO, WBC, WBA, we have so many champions in so many different organizations, you don't really know who to support. But the guy that can unify all those belts, in my mind, that's the true champion. And if you're a boxer, that should be your number one goal, is become the unified champion. If you're not the unified champion, in my mind, you're not the champ. And I'm sure that your father felt the same way, and that's why he worked so hard towards that goal. So after the Sugar Ray Leonard fight, he said, I'm done with boxing, enough of this. And then he went to Italy. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, he moved to Italy.
So out of all places in the world, you know, he made some money from boxing. Why not go to Mexico or Canada or South America? Why Italy?
Well, he fought over there at one time, and he liked it. Once he was over there, he liked it. He liked the culture. And, you know, and that was it, you know, and that's where he said he wanted to live and he wanted to move. I remember he went over there, didn't know how to speak a lick Italian, you know, and he just fell in love with the culture over there. And that's where he ended up being.
Did your father ever talk about the treatment of you know, black people in Italy? Because as we all know, back in the 1960s and 70s and the 80s, you know, things started to turn around a little bit. But I mean, you know, even to this day, there's still a lot of racial tension in America. How was he treated over there, even though he had, you know, darker skin?
Oh, he was treated well. He was treated well. He told me that they didn't really emphasize on that. So he was okay with it. And, you know, he really rarely talked about that, but he did mention it because that was one of our concerns as, you know, as his kids and his family. And he said that there was no problem with that. And they loved him over there. I bet you can go over there right now and mention his name and people just tell you how they feel about him. So.
Oh yeah. You know, I was looking over a bunch of YouTube videos the last couple of days, and I actually saw some people from Italy commenting on videos and saying, oh yeah, he came to my restaurant once before. And, you know, and we're so sad to hear that, you know, he had passed away. I mean, so obviously, you know, he was well liked in those communities over there. And that's very encouraging to hear. And unfortunately, the United States is a very, you know, multicultural country, but we can't seem to get along for some reason. But hey, here we are, me and you talking to each other. We don't have a problem. You know, maybe the media blows some of this out of proportion. I mean, I don't know. That's a whole rabbit hole that we can go down. But that's what I love about boxing. Right. Is in boxing, you got people from America, Korea, Japan, from Uganda. Exactly. And it don't matter, you know, what you look like, where you come from. If you can hit, you can hit.
Right. You can fight. That's the thing. Right. If you can fight, everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, I was looking at some pictures of your dad, some really old pictures, look like they came from, you know, the 70s. Some of them were in black and white, but he was with, you know, some of his training partners, and, you know, some of them were white, some of them were black, and they all had their arms around each other like, hey, it's no big deal. We're all brothers in this gym training, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's how it was. That's how it was at the gym. And I was there every day with them. So I never seen anything, you know, not anything. I seen everything but love, you know what I mean? So it wasn't about that at all.
Well, there's one unpleasant thing that I want to get out of the way in this interview, you know, and we can just move over it real quickly, but there's all kinds of conspiracy theories all over the internet about, you know, your dad took a COVID vaccine and that's the reason why he passed away and whatnot. Me and you talked on the phone and, you know, you're basically asking the public to respect your family and their privacy and let you guys, you know, deal with whatever, but he passed away and that's all the public needs to know. And we need to just focus on his legacy and who he was as a man. And that's really nobody's business. I mean, is that pretty much a fact?
Well, yeah, we're forbidden to talk about it. So we just got to wait. I mean, everybody got to wait until we get the green light to speak about it. You know what I'm saying? And I have to respect those wishes from my family. And that's what's going on, you know? We don't like the outcome of this whole thing anyway. So, you know, we're like, wow, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's not always about how someone dies, you know, but whenever someone does, you know, pass away. Like, I actually had a good friend of mine. He died on Christmas Eve last year, you know, and he had coronavirus and other health problems, but it's really sad, you know. But it doesn't matter how someone leaves this earth. Once they're gone, and all we have left is their memories. Right. And the only way that we can keep that person alive is by talking about them as we are, you know, right now. But moving on from that negativity, you know, I have to ask you, really curious, and I'm sure lots of other people are too. I mean, your father was a boxing legend. I mean, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. He had to have trained you at some point. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So did you ever get a chance to, you know, compete on a professional or amateur level, or did you just do it for fun or exercise, or you know, what was your involvement in the sport of boxing?
Well, when I was a kid, I'd always go to the gym with Dad all the time. And, you know, I would just sit at the table ringside, and I would draw, and then I got bored with that, and then I started falling asleep. So he was like, okay, no sleeping in the gym. So he gave me a bunch of workout stuff, and I started working out then. And I fought amateur, and I fought on the Evander Holyfield team. We went to the regional. I was Georgia State champ 2 times. And I never got a chance to turn pro. And, you know, it was difficult for me because Dad didn't want me to box. And he said if I was going to do it, I was going to be on my own. And I didn't stop boxing until competing until I was like 21. You know, but all of us kids know how to fight. He taught everybody. My biggest thing with him was when we was in the gym, if I was jump roping in front of the mirror, he would come over and jump rope with me. I loved it that, you know what I'm saying? We're both jump roping in the mirror, and he always used to, cause I'm a lefty too. And he used to always try to teach me to do it the right way. I remember his words was like, you got to learn how to do it the right way. If you don't learn how to do it the right way, you develop bad habits like me, and then you can't change them. And every time he would leave, I would switch back. He'd come back and say, hey, turn around. and I just kept doing it because I told him, I said, I felt comfortable doing it this way. And after that, he just left me alone.
You know, I found something very interesting. You know, so my father, he does, you know, carpentry, like he does flooring and all kinds of stuff like that. And he's really good at it. But he never wanted me to, you know, do that. He's like, oh, this is hard, back-breaking manual labor. You're smart. Do something different. Yeah. You know, so parents always want their kids to have an easier time than they had. But even though you ended up not turning pro, I understand that you have dipped your toes into the promotion side of boxing.
Well, yeah, I remember I had a lot of conversations with my dad. I mean, we got in a lot of arguments. You know, there was a lot of times that me and him, we didn't see eye to eye on things. And, you know, we had our disagreements, you know, because we were a lot alike. But I remember talking to him, you know, crying to him, like, why? You know what I'm saying? And he was just like, I don't want you to do it. You know, I don't need you to do it. Why don't you do something else? His biggest thing, he wanted another sports figure in the house, like football, basketball, baseball, mm-hmm. You know, something different. You know, take the name to another spot. And I remember when my son was playing football, and he was playing, he got a scholarship to come to Massachusetts. I can't think of the name of the school, but he went up there and he played football. My dad was very excited about that, and he was – on and stuff, but you know, like I said, he just wanted something different for us, and he didn't want us to go down that road where he was at, you know.
So how did you get involved in the promoting side of boxing? So I understand that you have your own promotion company now.
Well, what happened was, since that happened with Dad, when we talked about it, he was telling me, he was like, well, you could do something else in boxing. You don't always got to be a fighter. So we went through this whole list. So I just started shouting out things. I said, what about boxing commission? Nah, too much headache. What about boxing inspector? Oh, they don't get paid that much. You know what I'm saying? And I just went down a whole list. And then I said, what about boxing promotion, Dad? And he was like, I could see you doing that. So I started to get involved in that in 2007. And I was having some issues with a girlfriend that I was living at. And this is weird. This is really weird what I'm about to tell you. So the thing was for me to come to Ohio, and I had a tour. I was going to Cleveland, Toledo, Cincinnati, and I was just going to politic and you know, talk to people and get to know the fighters and see what type of boxing towns this was, the boxing state this was actually. And I knew a couple of people that was promoting, and they, you know, they was waiting for me to come, and I didn't show. I didn't go because I was having issues at home, and my dad was pissed. Believe me, you, he was very upset. He just laid into me. He was like, "No, now I don't want you to do it because you know how this boxing game goes. They're not gonna. Your word is everything, and if you can't keep your word, then I don't care. You should have still went." And I was like, "Dad, really?" He was like, "Yeah." So I didn't go, and then he left me alone. And then years later, I met my wife, you know, and then I moved to Ohio, and everything started right here in Ohio, Lima, Ohio. And I started, you know, I started getting my company together. I listened to a lot of things that my dad was saying, you know, because I was trying to do the promotions first and then get licenses and all that. But I had to learn the hard way that you had to have all your business stuff down first before mm-hmm. you play in the field. And I took his advice, did all that, and here I am now. And things are making a lot of progress with it. I learned a whole lot, and I am going to go to Fight Promotion University. I believe I want that on my resume, even though I learned a lot in the field and I know just about a lot of stuff now, but I would like to have that on my resume. And this summer I will be attending that university. It's the same university that Oscar De La Hoya went to, and I believe Zab Judah went to as well.
Well, are you familiar with Triller Fight Club? Did you see that promotion they had last weekend with Jake Paul?
Yeah, I see.
Me personally, I mean, you may feel differently, but I thought that it was a little bit unprofessional and sort of a stain on boxing. I didn't really like it. I think Triller Fight Club is a horrible boxing promotion. You know, What do you think would set your promotion apart from, you know, some of these other boxing promotions where they're either really boring and stiff and maybe a little bit too serious, and then on the other end you have like Triller Fight Club, which is like real over the top and it's almost like geared towards like teenagers and it's not serious enough? What do you think is going to make your promotion different or more special than these other promotions that are out here?
Well, I take it serious. I take it real seriously, and I want to put on good fights. And that's the thing, is to put on good fights, matchmaking. Your matchmaking's got to be dope. You know what I'm saying? And if your matchmaking mm-hmm. is about that, people will come. It'll take a minute for it to get established, but you got to understand, you got to go to the fight cities. You know, you can go exactly. to Albuquerque somewhere or any other state, and that state's not a boxing town. Like, I give you an example of what I learned. Lima, Ohio. Now, Lima, Ohio has an amateur fight going on, but they have no pros. You know what I'm saying? So who's going to come out and see a pro fighter? Nobody. You got to bring fighters from other states, and that's costly. You know what I'm saying? So you want to go yeah. somewhere like Kansas City where, you know, that's a fight town, big time. You know what I'm saying? Thanks. And there's a lot of homeboys there that's fighting, and you can grab a couple of those guys. People will come out and see them. And that's what you want. And like I said, it's all about your matchmaking. And that trailer stuff, I like it because it's good entertainment for boxing. You know what I'm saying? And if you know how to navigate right, you can do something. You know, you can have a couple of your guys maybe get in there and fight one of those guys and get some publicity. You know what I'm saying? If they allow it. But, yeah. you know, it's like the Butterbean thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, they ain't going to put, you know, a person in there beat up Buddy Bean, you know, saying Buddy Bean was like, he made more money for 4-round fighters than anybody that I know.
True. Yeah, facts, you know. You mentioned Kansas City earlier. I was just having flashbacks. I was out there in 2016, and, you know, they have some game-bred fighters out there in Kansas City. I mean, so shout-out to Kansas City. Yeah, and, you know, I'm here in Nashville, Tennessee, and our boy is Caleb Plant.
Tennessee, I know a lot of people out there. The Tennessee's a fight town, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, but you were talking about promotions and putting on good fights. That's one of my big pet peeves in boxing right now. Like, I love MMA. I love kickboxing, Olympic taekwondo, wrestling. I mean, I love all the combat sports. But the big problem that I have, the big problem I have in boxing, though, the last couple of years, is all these, you know, boxers want to be Floyd Mayweather and they want to have a perfect record, but they do it by fighting lesser competition. So, you know, you have some big name guy and you're like, oh, who's he going to fight? And then you're like, oh, I've never heard of his opponent. Like, who the hell is this guy? And then, you know, you're not excited. So, you know, what can we do to sort of bring boxing to the point where, like, the UFC is, where, like, you know, Dana White, he makes the top guys fight the top guys no matter what. And maybe he's able to do that because in MMA, fighters don't really have that much independent control over their contracts, whereas the UFC is kind of like a little bit of a monopoly, sort of, in my mind, and they can kind of fire and hire, you know, different fighters. So do you think that boxing, allowing the fighters to have more control, can kind of be a bad thing too, because it allows the boxers to be a little bit too picky sometimes?
Well, the thing is, the thing with that is, you got to know, fans got to know this. Some fights need to mature. You know what I'm saying? Some fights need to mature, so you can make the money. They happen too early. Like, if Marvelous fought Sugar Ray Leonard during the time that they were supposed to fight, they probably wouldn't have got that much money. You see what I'm saying? So this is why
it's arguable, they kind of, yeah.
But they do it, the way they do it is sometimes is despicable. Some of these guys got to fight. Like, I'll give you an example, like Mayweather. When Mayweather was coming up, there was a lot of good fighters at that time that he could have fought. And everybody was like, oh, Mayweather's running from this guy. Mayweather's running from that guy. No. Mayweather said, you know what? I'm going to wait for you to build your credentials. Then when you build your credentials, we'll fight. And that's what exactly happened. And that's what I like about Money Mayweather. But he set a tone, though. He set a tone that you gotta keep winning. That's the deal. You keep winning. You build up your following. You build up your popularity. You can sell tickets. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? Then he fought a lot of those guys afterwards.
But the difference between Mayweather and some of these other people is that Mayweather fought, you know, Sugar Shane Mosley, Miguel Cotto. You know, he has a lot of champions on his resume. And well, I know that in boxing, whenever someone's coming up, like their first 10 fights is, you know, usually against guys that have, you know, sort of questionable records or maybe not like a huge following, to sort of build themselves up and pad their record a little bit. I understand that. But if you've already had, you know, 15, 20 professional fights, it's time for you to start fighting some contenders, you know, and I understand that boxing is a physical sport. Your body's only going to be able to do it for so long. So you got to make the money while your body is still together. So you got to make smart investments. But at the same time, don't you want a legacy too? Like, so what if you're, you know, 100-0 undefeated, but you have no names on your resume? You know, you're not going to go down as, you know, a top 100 boxer. So I feel that the struggle that a lot of boxers are having now is sort of balancing making money and being able to retire healthy and, you know, be defensively sound and protect yourself and not get into stupid wars. But at the same time, having memorable fights that makes them great and talked about, you know, into the future. So, you know, as a promoter, how do you, or as a fight manager, how do you balance that with a fighter? How do you make those decisions?
Well, you have to, it's about selling tickets. So you, and promoting yourself. Okay. If you got a big following, but this other guy is a tough fighter, he's tough and he's good. You know what I'm saying? But if he can't sell tickets, that fight is not going to happen because high risk, I mean, low risk, high reward. You know what I'm saying? So you want to be able to... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Jake Paul, I mean, you know, even though he's fought a YouTuber and a basketball player and a retired MMA fighter who wasn't good at striking, he was mainly a wrestler. Jake Paul made, you know, like millions of dollars, and he's only fought three professional fights, but he has a huge following, and that's why all these fighters are calling him out, because they know it's going to be money for them. So, well,
of course, he's able to sell tickets. You know what I'm saying? You know, fighters don't want to fight somebody that's a high risk and low reward. You know, they don't want that fight because they got a chance of losing. So if you got a chance of losing, you want to get really compensated for that. You want to get some money for that fight, because it's a tough fight, and every time you get in the ring, you put your life on the line. So it's got to be worth it to the fighter. Sometimes that's why these fights don't happen. That's why people, you know, that's why you got fighters fighting these lame fights. They, you know, they're trying to stay on top. They're trying to keep their following or their popularity to a certain extent. But a lot of them don't like to promote themselves. You got a lot of good fighters out there, like Demetrius Andre. They don't really like to promote themselves, and they wonder why they can't get the fights that they want. And, you know, especially if you're good, and if you're good, and nobody wants to fight you, it's probably the reason is because you can't sell tickets. You're high risk, low reward.
Well, a really good example, you know, we were talking about Massachusetts fighters earlier. Mickey Ward, you know, I'm really happy for him because, you know, that movie The Fighter came out with Mark Wahlberg portraying him. He made some royalties off of that, and he had those big fights with Arturo Gatti, and I think he made like $2 or $3 million from those fights. But Mickey Ward was in a lot of wars, and even to this day, he has some vision problems, and he actually had to get a brain surgery, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm pretty sure that I'm not. But he's had a lot of surgeries and injuries, and now that he's older, he has to live with that. And as fans, we're cheering in the moment saying, yeah, yeah, but then after the fight is over, that fighter has to go on living his life. And if he's not compensated, then – that's why you hear the story of so many boxers who end up becoming taxi cab drivers, or you see them working as a janitor or working in a restaurant. And then, you know, there's nothing wrong with those jobs, but at the same time, it's like you were a world champion and now you're, you know, working as a taxi cab driver. Like, what happened? You know, and it's because they weren't smart with their career, and exactly with what you're talking about. So you do got to balance, you know, taking tough fights so that fans respect you, but also making enough money so that you can live comfortably later in life.
Well, it's about, you got to know, a lot of these fighters, you got to understand, a lot of these fighters, their job is just to fight. So they don't understand their finances. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if they don't invest well, they don't take care of their money, you'll see him at the restaurant, or you'll see him at the gas station pumping gas. And, you know, that needs to change. And that's why I like one of the organizations that I'm affiliated with is the ABA, American Boxing Association. And what they do, they give their fighters IRAs. So, you know, and all their money goes in, you know, you get the belt early in your career. And as you grow in your career, you dump all your money in your IRA. And even if you don't want to be a part of it, you don't want the belt anymore, and you move on to bigger belts, you still keep your IRA. And the American Box Association, it's only for American fighters. It's an American belt. And a lot of countries have their own belts. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So even we got one here too, NABF, I think it's called. But the NABF, they let anybody from other countries have that belt. But that's what I like about the American Boxing Association, because it's just for American fighters.
Well, you know, I'm 33, almost 34 years old. I'm going to be 34 in June. You know, but I've been training in boxing and martial arts since I was a little kid. And I remember in my early 20s, I would do, you know, kickboxing tournaments and different kind of things, and took on a couple of fights, you know, hey, here's $50, go fight. Whenever you're young, you're not thinking about 20 years later whenever you start getting arthritis and your shoulders hurting and you're not able to perform like you used to. And I feel that a lot of promoters and other, you know, events take advantage of the fact that these young fighters are looking for glory and they just love the sport. But these young guys don't understand, hey, one day your body's going to slow down. And if you don't make smart investments, you're going to look back and say, man, that was fun, but was it really worth it? And you don't want to be in that unfortunate situation. So you're making a lot of really good points there. But I want to move on and ask you a couple of fun questions. Being a fellow boxing head and coming from boxing royalty, your father being, you know, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who are your top 10 favorite boxers? They don't necessarily have to be the top 10 greatest of all time, but who are 10 boxers that you take a lot of inspiration from or just really look up to? And if 10 is too many, you know, you can knock it down to 5, whichever one you want to do.
Well, I have a lot of them. I mean, I like Joe Louis. I like Rocky Marciano. I like Jack Dempsey. I like Jack Johnson, John L. Sullivan, Ray Robinson, the Mongoose, you know what I'm saying? Ali, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, you know, of course, my dad. I like Tommy Hearns, you know what I'm saying? I even like Sugar Ray Leonard for what he did in boxing and the Mayweathers. So it's a lot of them. You know, there's a lot of guys that I give respect to, and then I watch a lot of their fights. You know, it's funny, right? If you watch Roger Mayweather versus Vinny Pazienza, and then watch Roy Jones versus Vinny Pazienza. I know Roy Jones watched Roger and Vinny Pazienza because he did the same thing Roger did. You know what I'm saying? He beat Vinny with the jab all day long and moved him. He just was a little more active than Roger was. He moved. Roy was moving left and right, and he put a whooping on Vinny Pazienza. But he did it the same style as Roger did, and it's amazing how you know some you can watch a guy fight and say, wow, I like that style. I think I'm gonna use that against him. I know it works. You know what I'm saying? So I like a lot of guys, man. A lot of guys I give a lot of respect to, you know, just because they got great backgrounds and great training ethics. I like that. You know what I'm saying? I like that because my dad was one of them. You know what I'm saying? So and Marciano used to say, hey, if you eat like a horse, you gotta train like a horse.
Well. I wanted to ask you another question, too. You may or may not know this, but maybe in passing conversation. Was there anyone that your father wanted to fight but never got the opportunity to, and it sort of always, you know, maybe ate at him a little bit or kind of, oh, yeah. You know?
He wanted to fight Hugo Coro. Oh, my God. He wanted to fight that guy so bad. There's videos on it, but I think he's the only one that has it. And I remember just going through that with him, and Hugo Caro talked so much junk, and he just kept talking, and they signed the contract, the whole nine, and Hugo Caro never showed up. He was pissed. He wanted that fight so bad. Boy, he wanted that. Hugo Caro rattled his cage so much that it was bananas.
Well, and I wanted to, you know, ask you one more question about the Sugar Ray fight. So after all was said and done and so many years had passed, did your father have a real beef with Sugar Ray Leonard, or did he, you know, respect him? Or what was his overall feeling about Sugar Ray Leonard, just as a boxer?
He didn't like Sugar Ray Leonard for a lot of reasons, you know what I'm saying? And their relationship got better as time went on, you know what I'm saying? And up to date now, it was pretty decent.
Well, are you familiar with Mike Tyson's podcast, Hot Boxing?
Yeah, I seen that, yeah. I like what Mike like what Mike said. You know, Mike said it the best. He said, you know, he was overlooked and he was an uncrowned champion and he fought a lot of fights, you know, and I like that Mike brought that up. It was because a lot of people don't really bring that up, the fact that he was an uncrowned champion. You know what I mean? And yeah. I like that Mike brought that up, and I thought that was dope. If Mike Tyson's watching, shout out to you, Mike. Thanks, man.
Well, you know, I am going to transfer this interview onto YouTube and other platforms and, you know, make sure it gets, you know, the viewership that it deserves. But I was going to say that Sugar Ray Leonard was on his podcast recently, and he gave some props to your dad and was like, hey, he's a legend. And he gave his condolences and said, hey, the Marvelous One, he deserves all the props in the world. So, you know, take my hat off to Sugar Ray for stating the obvious. You know, we already know this, you know, but I mean, your dad was such an amazing guy, and what you're doing, you know, I know that being the son of Marvin Hagler, people are always asking you, hey, what about your dad? What about your dad? But you are your own guy, and you have your own goals, and you have your own career moving forward. So I respect James Hagler. Like, I don't look at you as, oh, this is just the son of Marvin Hagler. You know, I enjoy talking with you. You're obviously a very knowledgeable boxing head. You know, you've done some boxing yourself, and I'm so happy that you've started this boxing promotion, because someone like you, you obviously care about these fighters, and I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that fighters need to start an IRA and a savings and, you know, protect themselves for retirement. So even though if you do end up becoming a very successful promoter, which I'm sure that you will, I suspect that you'll be looking out for these fighters too, and you won't be afraid to pull them to the side and say, hey man, you know, I'm worried about you. You know, so do you see yourself sort of being that sort of father figure for these young up and coming fighters and treating them fairly in your promotion?
Of course, that's what it's all about. It's all about, you know, teaching them fighters about their money. You know what I'm saying? And I'm about that life. And I told my dad once I got involved in this that I would do that right. You know what I'm saying? And make sure I take care of my fighters. I want to see my fighters successful. I want them to be able to, I want them to think about life after boxing. You know what I'm saying? What are you going to do after this over? You can only do it for so long, you know? So it's very important that, you know, that they have this in their conscientious mind while they go for their goals, you know?
That is so important, and, you know, that's something that I wish I thought about whenever I was younger, because I was doing a lot of dumb stuff and, you know, getting hurt and just not thinking. But now that I'm in my 30s, I'm waking up and having to stretch a little bit more than I had to. But we'll get ready to wrap this up here in a moment, and we'll just close with I'll just ask you, if someone is interested in James Hagler Promotions, how can they follow you? How can they get involved? For investors out there, how can they, help, you know, push you up? Or if there's a fighter watching and they want to be in your promotions, you know, so throw it all out there at us, James Hagler Promotions. How do we get involved?
Well, you can always go to my Facebook page or Instagram. You can DM me or message me. I always check all my messages, and I think my phone number is up on there too. You can always, you know, give me a call, you know, and we'll chop it up and see what we could do.
And another thing too that I wanted to, I almost forgot this, I'm glad that I remembered, but I believe it was you who started a petition on the internet to get a statue built of your father in Brockton, Massachusetts, to be next to the Rocky Marciano statue or something along that lines. Is that correct?
Yeah, we got a petition that's going on social media. You know, just sign it. And the thing is about that, they were talking about it. They are talking about it. And the place where it probably is going to go is Massasoit College. My dad had a college fund for kids there, and he was, you know, affiliated with Massasoit, so people were saying that that's where they would like it to go. I like the idea myself.
Well, you know, I'll be signing that, and I'll make sure to share that around and make sure, you know, many people see it. And I guess my final question for you is, you know, just in a minute or so, you know, if we can just sum it up, or however long you want to go, no time limit here, but what's the final thing that you want people to really remember about your dad? That, you know, of course he was an amazing boxer, but just overall as a human being, what is the life lesson of Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and what should people remember about his essence and who he was and what he, you know, brought to the world? What do you want the world to know about him specifically?
Is that he had compassion for everybody. And he was a good guy, you know what I'm saying? And he did everything the right way. He was very disciplined, you know what I'm saying? And he went after what he wanted. You know, I just want him to be remembered as his legacy and the fact that he was a good man.
All right. Well, rest in peace, the Marvelous One. You know, big fan right here. And now I'm a big fan of you, and I'll be watching your moves in the boxing world. And everywhere I go, I'll be praising your name. And you'll be building a brand new legacy that is unique to yourself. So the way that we talk about the Marvelous One, Marvin Hagler, as a boxer, hopefully in the future we'll be talking about James Hagler being in the same category as, you know, an Al Haymon or, you know, one of those guys being one of those top names in the name of boxing promotions and being well known for being fair and compassionate and having all those qualities instilled by your father that transformed into the promotions world. So I definitely look forward to seeing what you bring to the table in the next couple of years in the boxing world. Now that we're coming out of this coronavirus pandemic, things are starting to get a little bit, things are starting to finally get normal, and then we can start having some big events. So in closing, before we end this, just tell people again, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, you can go to my Instagram, James Hagler Promotions. You can go to Facebook, James Hagler, and you can go to LinkedIn, James Hagler Promotions. And you can DM me, you can message me, or give me a call.
Okay. All right, man. Well, that's all the questions I have for you. Amazing interview. You know, maybe we'll do this again in the future.
Can I tell you one story?
Okay, sure.
All right, I want to tell you a story. This story, right, because all of us kids know how to box. Right. And this is the first time that we found out. I mean, we boxed our sister before, you know, so we boxed her before. But this is the first time we found out that she was a killer. Right. And we're in Brockton. This is 80 Darren Drive, that's where we live. And we got friends over. And anybody knows me, when you come over to our house, you can't leave unless you put the gloves on. So I got all the kids out there boxing. So it's time for my sister to box. So my brother Monk and Champ, they're in her corner, and I'm the ref, and then my cousin Hershey has his friend boxing. So I went over to him, and I said, hey, take it easy. This is my sister. You know, he's a little older than her, and he's kind of tough kid. He said, don't worry about it. I got this. Don't worry about it. We're going to have fun. I said, okay, cool. So the bell rings. My sister just opens up a can of ass whooping on him. I mean, like Tommy Hearns and Marvelous Marvin Hagler fighting. And me and my brothers, we're looking at each other like, what the hell is going on here? And she's beating him up. He had to stop fighting back, because if he didn't, he was going to get nailed into the ground. So the bell rings. So I goes over to him. I said, hey, what's up? What's that, man? He says, wait a minute, man. She's trying to kill me, man. I can't do that. She's trying to kill me, man. I got to fight. I said, okay. So we ring the bell again, right? My sister nails him again and gave him a bloody nose the whole nine. So the fight's over. They did 2 rounds, 2 minutes. So I goes in the house, and my room is by the bathroom. I go use the bathroom, and my dad's in my room. So he says, come here. I thought I was in trouble. He said, why you do that? I said, what are you talking about? She tried to kill him. He said, I know. I was watching it from the window, and he was cracking up. And he said, don't put the gloves on Celeste no more. It was funny. He was so proud to see his daughter kick ass. That it was unbelievable.
See, you know, our generation today has gotten so soft, and you know, nowadays, you know, everything is considered, that right there is too rough. Like, you know, don't spank your kids and all this kind of stuff. But hearing stories like that really makes me smile, because, you know, nowadays we see less and less of that. But, you know, stories like that, man, just character building. And even though, you know, she's a girl, she obviously has, you know, those genes flowing through her. And, you know, she makes something
happen. Yeah, she, I mean, if she boxed, she would have been good. You know, this is it's her, my sister Celeste, my brother Monk, and Sherelle. Sherelle's the baby. If you fight them, they're like Mike Tyson. Either they're going to knock you out or you're going to knock them out. There's no playing with them. There's no in between with them. They're rough. They're real mean and nasty when they put the gloves on. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, anytime that I'm out, you know, in the streets and just living life, if I, you know, end up bumping into someone and I see that their name tag says Hagler, I'm not going to take any chances. Like, look, you might be related. So, you know, I'm just going to move on this way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but yeah, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. Great stories. I mean, I could talk to you for hours, man, and we'll have to do this again sometime in the future. But like I said, I'll definitely be following your promotion companies and everything that you're doing. And just thank you so much, man. It's been a real treat just hearing stories about your family and your upbringing, about your dad. And, you know, later on this weekend, I'll probably go and, you know, watch some more of his fights now that I have some of these stories in my mind. Yeah. I'm like, okay, now I see the man behind the fighter, and it makes the fight itself a little bit more interesting. So, man, I really appreciate this, man. And I'll be uploading this, like I said, on YouTube, Spotify, all the platforms, and make sure that we get these stories out here, because these stories is how we keep your father's memory alive, and it's how we promote your brand and what you're doing, and we can make sure that you become successful in your endeavors as well. So thank you so much for coming on, and we're going to end this transmission. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. And I want to say one thing before you go. I hope to see you guys at the memorial. I will be giving a speech, and you know, the memorial is May 23rd, starts at 2:00, but we'd like for you to be there at 1:00.
All right. And where's the location, the address?
I'm sorry. Location is Brockton, Massachusetts, at the Rocky Marciano Stadium.
Wow, very fitting. Very fitting. Yeah. All right. Well, you heard it, guys. That was James Hagler from James Hagler Promotions, the son of Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Thank you so much.
All right. See y'all later.
All right, man. God bless.
Yep. Yeah.